Welcome, everyone. This is Evangelist Budine, and I'm part of the Restored Government of God. Today's teaching is titled Trusting the Process of Faith for the Transformation of the Soul. Satan, the accuser of the brethren, is always at work, sowing his suggestions which are aimed at breaking down trust in God. He knows how frailty works and preys upon Adam's weakness in order to call faith into question and to call our worth in Christ into question. Let's read some history on Satan's act of independence against God and how his hatred and jealousy over Adam caused him to fall. Here are a few paragraphs from the book called Breaking the Antichrist Code by Chief Apostle Erich von Undersek. God created Adam on the sixth day and called the angels to come and bow before Adam to serve him and to fulfill his needs. Yet Satan, wounded in pride, refused to come. He saw God's denial of his entitlement as an affront, a deliberate insult. God had commanded Satan, in all his beauty, light, and wisdom, to come and bow before one whom Satan considered beneath him. You can imagine his indignity. He was mortified, much like Haman, who spent his spare time soothing his bruised feelings by building the gallows on which he intended to hang Mordecai. Satan thought he could get back to his happy place by removing Adam from the earth. We begin to understand why Satan had such a hard time loosening his grip on God's promises to Adam. He was within reach of something his imagination had created, and he was so close to possessing it, he did not want to let it go. When Satan refused to come and bow his knee to Adam, he crossed the threshold of independence and entered into a new experience. Satan became the first to draw God into conflict. He was the first to act independently of his Creator. He had seen God as benevolent and thought he could excel with the capabilities God gave him, and he pushed himself forward for recognition. He challenged God because he believed that he could beat his Creator. He felt that if he beat God at his game, God would then appreciate Satan's gifted genius in using the powers God gave him to contest him. God would then concede to Satan and grant him his desire to rule over the earth. Satan's philosophy is that he should be measured by his achievements and not his shortcomings. Yes, Satan is profoundly affected by his own ideals. We should take note that what Satan calls achievement merely follows the measure of his self-delusion. Self-delusion and fraud go hand in hand. Satan sought unlawful gain in this dimension through deliberate deception. His intent was to cheat the human race of the inheritance that rightfully belongs to us. Satan is not interested in peaceful coexistence with Adam. He is only interested in unseating and uprooting the human race in order to steal our promised position with God. Satan envied Adam for the promise of sharing the throne of God, and therefore he determined within himself, if I can't have it, you can't have it. I'll show God how unworthy you really are. And that's the end of that excerpt. So the last sentence stood out where Satan says, if I can't have it, you can't have it. I'll show God how unworthy you really are. In our daily growth cycle, we face many challenges and options to faith which Satan presents to the mind. A familiar suggestion you might have already identified is the suggestion of the enemy that you are unworthy before God. Let's look at this enlightening piece from the list of the 18 inclinations of man under the inclination to expect the worst. It is wrapped up in the psyche of man to expect the judgments of God's wrath because of sin. After Satan's counsel was heeded, after the tether to God was broken, after sin was introduced, man reacted to this breach between him and God by standing in expectation of God's judgments. As a result, the natural man is inclined to expect the worst of someone or a situation or of themselves, and is therefore prone to feelings of inferiority, is suspicious of the motives of others, and tends to worry that bad news is coming. The natural man, expecting God's judgments, is in a constant state of feeling unworthy of God's love. He often tries to deal with this by submitting himself to spiritually flogging, beating God to the punch, so to speak, or uses works of contrition, looking for ways to be found worthy of God's love. And that's the end of that excerpt. So, here we learn that the natural man is prone to feelings of inferiority and is in a constant state of feeling unworthy of God's love. What the law of Moses could not do is purge the conscience of sin and death, and that is why Jesus died on the cross and rose from the dead, to establish a new and better covenant wherein we experience the purging of the conscience, the justification of Jesus Christ, and freedom from the condemnation that Satan so loves to sow. If he can get you to lay down the tools of the covenant for whatever reason, then he can get you to ultimately forget God. Satan's desire is to shift the focus from faith to frailty. He wants you to become stuck, spending your time trying to prove your worth to God or yourself through the works of the flesh or putting on good behavior, for example. When the focus of faith is shifted to self, it becomes a stopping point to faith. God has called us to meet the standard of Jesus Christ for faith. When we respond positively to His grace every day, after having come into covenant with Him and having received the re-education in truth through covenant apostles, our faith lacks no good thing and is accepted of Him. There is nothing of the flesh that God wants or needs. He wants faith to reflect Jesus Christ. This is not optional but a commandment of the Lord. Another angle to this deception and tactic of the enemy to detain you in your thoughts about your worth before God is the suggestion to doubt the quality of your faith and to look for your equity in the flesh. Again, we see the option to faith, to sort out behavior or circumstances or relationships, etc., in order to try and find equity and establish our worth before God. Satan suggests that because we walk in covenant with God, we will no longer get angry or feel weak or be disappointed by others. Faith is not about reaching a place where frailty will no longer exist. Faith is about applying the mind of Christ in each cycle of growth. Let's read about frailty from the Apostles' Doctrine, which defines it according to God's perspective. Our need defines our frailty. The care of that need defines frailty. The care of that need includes some of these factors: the physical, the social, the economical, and the emotional. These become the acting powers upon our signature, which governs our thinking and impacts how we are touched and how we touch this dimension in order to care for our needs. After the fall, everything of Adam became dark and defiled, because the soul was made subject to the appetites in place of being subject to God. Frailty is part of the mystery of iniquity, but is not iniquity itself. Ever since we were born, we were faced with a frailty of need, which developed an appetite, which became a power, which Satan directed to destroy our soul. This state of the soul is called iniquity. Frailty was there at the beginning, innocently presenting itself as a need. By the time iniquity crafted a design with the need, it brought condemnation. The state of innocence ends when iniquity is being molded into the soul. The match can be used to build a fire, to cook your food, or warm your house. Or it can be used to burn down your house. We use the tools of God and He returns us to innocence. There is no sin in grace. We must choose who governs the match. Either the law of God governs the match or the law of sin and death. And that's the end of that excerpt. So, we cannot put off frailty by putting on good behavior or good works. This is not how God designed faith to work. We put on Christ by using His tools and we are humbled by grace. Regeneration is a process of the healing and transformation of the soul which continues over a lifetime until we die or the rapture of the church takes place. In John 15 verse 8 we read, "Herein is my Father glorified, that you bear much fruit, so shall you be my disciples." There is a distinction that the Lord is bringing to our attention. He is lifting out the subtle suggestions of the enemy, which can easily slip under the radar when the activity to labor with the anointing is put off. While it is good to make good choices of faith, to clothe ourselves in behavior that is fitting to Christ, for example, to remain from filthy communication, our worth is not found in displaying a false piety, and overcoming is not in the change of behavior or attitudes in our own effort. God teaches us how the provocations of the enemy works and how each provocation carries in it either a promise or a threat. In this scenario, we can discern a threat in his provocation where he calls our worth into question. Satan suggests that because we might still get angry at times or feel disappointed, or whatever the emotion is that might present itself in the moment, that faith must be lacking something and that we need to now look to the flesh to see how we can do things better or be better. So what's happening? Satan is exploiting the moral code. But Jesus Christ calls us to diligence with his tools and to keep cadence with his spirit regardless of the contradictions and conflicts that we face. We are daily put in view of the contradiction of self. Because man carries in his psyche those feelings of unworthiness before God, and because of the influence of false knowledge upon the soul while in the kingdom of darkness, he has learnt a bad habit, which is to try and fix himself in order to stand worthy before God. We have not been called to fix ourselves. Only God can do that. We walk by covenant faith, which focuses not on frailty, but on the building of his house. In 1 John 4, verse 4, we read, "You are of God, little children, and have overcome them, because greater is he that is in you than he that is in the world." God calls us to trust the process of faith to the tools and the process of healing to him, and to not look to self and how we can better ourselves to be more patient or to be more understanding, etc. The bending of the will or to imitate the virtues of Christ is not divine transformation. Satan uses aspiration to develop will worship. It is true that because of the design of the soul, each one of us longs after gentleness and kindness and to be a good person. But when we step outside the boundaries of the covenant, looking to the tools of the flesh for spiritual transformation, we are not walking by faith, but laboring with the aspiration. We labor in faith to keep our vessels full, that we might not get distracted by those things which God is removing from us, for we continue to keep the fire on the altar burning, offering those spiritual sacrifices which please him. I would like to share a dream for your edification, which I had last week. So in the dream, I was in a large house and a storm was brewing outside. It started to rain, and in one of the rooms there was a weak spot in the roof, and eventually it broke open because of the weight of all the water, and it gushed into the room. Down below in the kitchen, I saw a woman tending to the children and the duties of the house, regardless of the fact that the water was now gushing in through the roof in the other room. The symbolism of the weak spot in the roof points to the frailties of the flesh. The symbolism of the storm and the heavy rain speaks about the five C's of death which we are daily faced with in our growth cycle, and these five C's are conflict, contradiction, controversy, contrariness, and contrast. In covenant, we don't labor to try and change the face of death. We labor to overcome death by the power of Jesus Christ in his tools. We endure the contradictions to our faith, focusing not on these things, nor our frailty, but we continue to build the house of the Lord, even as the woman continued to take care of the duties of the house, regardless of the water that came gushing into the other room. I want to read another edifying piece from the lesson called Frailty. So when the children of Israel passed through the Red Sea, what was the first thing that they were faced with? We have no food, we have no water. What was God doing? God could have supernaturally sustained all the children of Israel in the wilderness so that they would not feel the need for food or water, just as he did for Moses when Moses went up into the mount. But even after God provided their deliverance, the children of Israel hungered and thirsted in the wilderness. God was providing a means to test the heart. God allows the opposition to give strength. It is in the face of the opposition that we exercise our faith. If the opposition were not there, we would become weak. God provides the challenging environment to strengthen our resolve, to cause the will to work with His holy knowledge, so He leaves frailty in place. When we experience our cycles of growth, we experience revelation, resistance, and reward. The revelation we understand and enjoy. God is communicating to us. The reward we understand. God is rewarding our diligent seeking by making Himself known. The resistance part of the cycle is troubling. It's as if frailty is on every hand, magnified. It's as if our biological messages and the circumstances of life are creating the conditions where it seems as if we are seeing a drive with our frailty and iniquity is being expressed instead of grace, and we are frustrated and angry. People want to know if this is sin. That all depends on what tools you are working with. It's at this crucial time that the Spirit is waiting to create temperance in you. This is the time when you need to continue to pray in the Spirit and not abandon the tool out of frustration. You are in view of the contradiction that lies in you more than the fruits of the Spirit, and this view is not very edifying. But if you use the tools of the covenant that represent Christ, then the power of the Spirit will create the life of Christ in you. It's that simple. This is the whole point of knowing God. If you use the tools, then you are doing righteousness, and you will, in time, see the fruits of that labor. And that's the end of that excerpt. I also want to share a word of knowledge the Lord gave me to assist me in a time of trial where frailty was magnified on every side, and that word was Ferguson. Ferguson is a male name, and one of the definitions which I found to be very interesting was the meaning vigorous man. So vigorous, according to the dictionary, means characterized by or involving physical strength, effort, or energy, or being forceful. So this reminds me of something I heard in one of the online assemblies which greatly strengthened my faith, that we apply our faith with force and endure the contradiction until the time of our growth cycle comes to completion. We know that the reward of increase and fruit awaits us at the end of each growth cycle, and therefore we press on that we might gain that prize. Applying our faith with force means continuing to lay hold of the tools of the covenant in times of trial. Regardless of the accusations of the enemy that comes against our faith or the magnified view of frailty in times of challenge, we continue to diligently apply ourselves with those things wherein we have life. We continue to labor with that which we know to be true about Jesus Christ. This is how we continue to stand in His testimony, enduring all things unto the end. That same power that raised Jesus Christ from the dead is the same power that daily works to heal the soul. How much more can we not trust the process of faith to the tools of the covenant? We are working with the same power which raised Jesus from the dead when we use His tools, which also raises us from the dead in each cycle of growth as we die to the old man. God created the heavens, the earth, and all the angels without our help. He doesn't need our help to be able to heal the soul. And here I'm referring to the introspection of the flesh and the efforts to change the behavior or thinking patterns apart from the labor of faith. We take care of our priesthood, and God takes care of our soul to birth within it the substance of His glory. We are the praise of God's glory. Above all things which He has created, He values the righteous, those who have come into covenant with Him, the most. We willingly go through the purging fire of truth and endure the circumcision of the Spirit, for our Father's honor and not our own. The fruit that we bear in our priesthood honors God. We learn the fear of the Lord through contact with the tools of the covenant, and through this contact we learn to trust Him. Trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not to your own understanding. This means continue to bring your sacrifices to the altar and don't try to find a reason for your faith outside of the covenant. This is Evangelist Budine. Thank you so much for listening. If you would like to learn more about God's restored government or how to transition into covenant, please reach out on our website at saw.org. www.restoredgovernmentsofbudin.org.